Us are just trying to.
Yeah, thanks, John.
All right.
That was duly noted as you were entering. Good morning, everyone. We'll start the March 4th, 2022 meeting of the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. My name is Brendan Sharkey, and I am the chairman of ACIR. And with me is the vice chair, Lyle Ray. I don't know, Lyle, if you have any words to add, welcome.
Yes, sir. You're good to go.
All right, good. Well,
and you do have an agenda, I mean, a quorum.
What's your agenda, Bruce?
I don't know what my agenda is, but you do have a quorum.
Okay, great. Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for letting us know. Okay, so we do have a quorum present. I know this is a busy, busy time for many of us who are following the activities of the General Assembly, because this is we're right in the middle of public hearing. Public hearings that are taking place in various committees throughout the General Assembly. So appreciate folks taking the time to join us today, and hopefully we can expedite our efforts this morning and let everyone kind of go back to the other things that they're doing in their respective responsibilities. So again, this is a Zoom meeting. Please, as we know, indicate your interest in speaking by raising your raise hand function or waving madly at the camera, and you'll be recognized. But otherwise, if you can stay muted, that'll help break down any background noise. There are, just as a heads up, there are a couple of agenda items that do require a vote. So if you are intending to leave or have to leave, if you could just flag that with Bruce, or, you know, by interrupting, because I think we'd like to try to get to those agenda items sooner than later while we have a quorum. So we may be skipping around on the agenda, but if we don't get to those and you intend to leave or have to leave early, please let us know, because it may affect our quorum. So with that, I'll ask for a motion to approve the draft minutes of February 4th. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Lyle. Second?
Second.
That's Ron Thomas. Thank you, Ron. Any comments or questions on that, on the agenda, or changes? Okay, if not, I'll try your minds. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed or abstentions? Okay. All right, so that's our first voting item, which is now passed. Membership updates, if any, is the next item on our agenda. I'm going to use this because Bruce, I neglected to just remind folks of this and make it a formal item on the agenda. But just so folks know, speaking of the busy public hearing schedule at the General Assembly, at noon today, the Planning and Development Committee is taking up a bill that will be hearing a bill based upon our report on remote meetings. For those of you who are not familiar with it, the proposed legislation for the hearing as drafted would simply eliminate the current deadline or expiration date of the authorization for remote meetings to occur by municipalities and boards of ed, lift that end date for that authorization that's currently set for next month, and lift it indefinitely. Our report to them recommended that they at least extend the authorization into next year, and I communicated personally, at the very least, and I communicated to Chairman McCarthy Vahey that what was expressed by many in the group, that if there is to be an end date still established in statute, that it occur at a time when the legislature is actually in session, because of the havoc it would wreak on municipalities to stop doing remote meetings that they've gotten used to at some point when the legislature is not available or around to to address it. So, for example, you know, arbitrarily on October 1 to end meeting dates, it would leave towns with the situation where they'd have to stop their remote meetings into, you know, whenever for several months. So she agreed to that. And I think her resolution to that that we discussed was just lift it entirely and see how the public responds to it. So I will be testifying at the public hearing on behalf of ACIR. We have draft testimony that I think, Bruce, if we could just hand that around to folks just so you have, we just finished that yesterday. So, or make it available in the chat if anyone wants to read that, but essentially supports the bill. And is basically reports on what we reported on in our study and then otherwise make ourselves available for further comment. All right. So that's just one. I'll take the privilege of adding that to item 3 on our agenda. With regard to membership update as well, I know Bruce and I have been talking sporadically about appointments and expirations and additions. So we are somewhat in flux in a couple of cases, and we also need to also revisit membership with some folks who have not been in attendance regularly to see if they're still intending to do that and perhaps seek additional. Thank you, Martin, for posting the testimony. I'm going to be reaching out to some of the members who have not been in attendance regularly to see if they may be willing to relinquish their position, get their appointing authority to appoint someone, in their stead, if they're having a difficult time attending. So, we are going to need to do that, over the course of this next month, and, we'll hopefully report back next month with some updates on that. Bruce, I don't know if you had anything more to add to that agenda item.
No, I don't. I can, I will add a little, which is that CCM has a nomination into the governor's office. Cost is working on on finding someone to be nominated. And one last thing is that this is Lyle Ray's final meeting as a member of the ACIR, and I understand that CTCOG will be choosing someone to nominate at their next meeting. So I hope I didn't steal any thunder from you, Chairman Brendan.
Well, you know, I was debating whether we should raise this today because I didn't want this to be an item that we would just mention and say hi and goodbye and thanks and move on. I really felt that we should have a dedicated agenda item to more formally thank Lyle for all of his years of service. But also, there are some other options for Lyle to perhaps stay with us in another capacity outside the CROG. So I think that's one of the items we were going to work on over the course of the next month to see if there's another way that Lyle can stay with us. So,
Mr. Chair, can I preview that so we can briefly?
Yeah.
You can cancel the parade in my honor. That's too much. But the continuation would be in terms of working on the research elements of ACIR. And of course, there's a number of faces on the screen I would like to involve. But the idea is to spearhead a group of people who would identify, select, prioritize, and then manage a research portfolio on behalf of ACIR at no cost to ACIR. So that would be what I would offer as provided for in the statute. And I'd be happy to do that. So that's just a preview of a conversation that we could have if the ACIR was interested. But I think it would be very helpful. And I did reach out to Professor Al-Qadri at UConn, and he's very happy to work on that with me. So we could continue with that. But, you know, set up a research group, identify issues, prioritize them, reach out to sources of research, and then provide studies and then potentially webinars to follow up on that, as we're doing in partnership with CCM and others. So anyway, that's just a preview of whenever we want to have that conversation.
Great. Yeah, that obviously is a fabulous option that's available to us. Do you have the potential, Lyle, do you think of of fitting in as a member through another appointment? Is that in fact an option as well, or is there? I'm sorry, we should be talking about this offline.
Yeah. I would suggest that I would attend as a sort of guest with special privileges or whatever it is. I don't want to take up someone else's slot. So I indicated to Bruce that I would relinquish my slot to carry on, but this would be a role sort of extra, you know, what's the word? It's not like ex officio, but it's a role where I would be there at meetings to participate. And so I'd understand what's going on, so I could help participate better on the research side. So that would be the proposal, but I would not see that I would take a slot and vote.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, I did plan a parade, so so I'd like to still do that because I just think that's a more appropriate recognition of all the stuff that you've been doing for many, many years before I ever even came on the scene with ACIR and elsewhere. So if it's okay with you, Lyle, I would like to, whether you attend as a member or as a member, an ex officio member or of the public, I'd like to actually set an agenda item so folks can actually appropriately acknowledge all the work that you've been doing without embarrassing you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jim?
Yes, I just want to say that what Lyle is suggesting, whichever way it can be accomplished, sounds like a terrific idea to me, because that's really what we need. We need more horsepower to do kind of these research projects, at the very least to lead and to create the focus for the research project. So if Lyle would be willing to do that, either as a member or an ex officio member, however you can work it, I think that would be terrific.
Yeah, agreed, Jim. Yeah, I totally agree. I think other members agree as well. Thank you for offering that up. So we'll talk some more.
Sure. And we will, of course, be looking for volunteers on this screen to participate. So it's not a matter of sending me off to go do it. It's a matter of.
Right.
You know, I think John.
I don't see anyone touching their nose and saying, not me. Or not
I think yet. John Filchak just volunteered. I kind of heard it.
Okay, good. So thank you, Lyle. And we'll talk some more before the next meeting. So I wanted to then move on to item four, which is ACIR's regular reports. Bruce, this is your part of the agenda typically.
Right. So I turned my camera back on for this. And you'll see the annual report is mentioned here. I'm going to mention that, get back to that in a moment. But what I added is the session mandate report. And I noted that mandates are normally identified after the session ends. And there has been discussion primarily pre-COVID of perhaps the ACIR doing something a little different in, say, getting involved during the session, you know, identifying, hey, here's a potential problem coming along or whatever. It would be up to the group. And I just wanted to point out that this is something the group has talked about, and you may want to talk about it today or maybe have it on the agenda for next month, that there is an interest in doing something there. Then I'll just very quickly go back to the annual report and say that I promised it would be ready by now. But the trouble I'm facing is that during the legislative session, there's always something about to happen that you're waiting to see if there might be an assignment and so on. And with this report not having a due date, would it be better to have the annual report plus work plan come out at the end of the legislative session so you know what might be assigned to you that will be your work plan for the coming year? There's no universal law saying that an annual report has to be a calendar year. It could very easily be a fiscal year or whatever. And I keep adding minor edits to what I've written as things change. And I'm just curious if the group might entertain the idea of, say, targeting a July date for it so it can, the work plan can incorporate whatever the legislature tells you to do.
Yeah, I tend to support that, but are there any other comments?
I think it makes a lot of sense that we know what our the imposed work plan, so to speak, is, and the one we select, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah, Bruce. As with last year, you know, we may be tasked with an assignment from one or more committees, and we also may be, whether formally tasked but through legislation, as we were last year, or just informally, we've had some conversations about working with Commissioner Boughton on some property tax issues as well. We don't know if that has come to fruition yet. So that does kind of make sense, Bruce. I think that's a good idea. So we'll put that off after the session's over, if everybody's in agreement. Okay. Let's see. So that's, and then the mandates report. Yeah. So Bruce, could we obviously that's also a post-session, item, but, could you perhaps, set up for next meeting, you know, couple paragraphs on where we kind of all have left off that conversation about a different form. I don't want to necessarily want to take it all up now and open all that up now for the first time again, but maybe we can do that. If you could set us up for that for an agenda item next month, I think that makes sense.
I will do that.
Great. Thank you. So item 5 on our agenda is the LGF initiative. And possible work for the subcommittee. I wanted to report to the group that we did meet a week ago Tuesday to take up the suggestion that came from Jim O'Leary about looking into local emergency response networks and systems. And we actually dedicated the entire meeting of the of the LGF subcommittee to that for that purpose. Jim, I don't know if you want to maybe reiterate what we came up with on that.
Sure. Thank you, Brandon. The first thing I would like to say about that is I tried to point out during that meeting that the relationship between the state government and local government is critical during emergencies. And the most critical part of that relationship is probably obvious. It's the communication part. And so what I was suggesting is that perhaps ACIR could take a look at how the state agencies communicate with the local government and how the local government communicates back. In other words, that pipeline that carries information up and down the channel. And all of that is established throughout the nation according to the National Incident Management Plan and is... how would you say it's captured in state legislation and in executive orders by the last three governors, so that there is a procedure in place through the Division of Emergency Management to make sure to ensure that all of the players, the municipal governments and the state agencies are all on the same wavelength, so to speak, as they communicate with one another. So trying to create this communication system in accordance with the National Incident Management Plan is really a critical aspect of emergency management. And it's my belief that this process can be improved. And so I thought that perhaps, since it does involve communication between the branches of government, that's really right in our neighborhood, so to speak. I will tell you that as we get into the conversation, the Deputy Commissioner Brenda Bergeron, Deputy Commissioner of the Division of Emergency Management, is planning to attend the meeting on March 22nd. And so we can get her perspective on this at that time.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Jim. I think there was, I think it's fair to say that there was a little bit of concern might be too strong a word, but there was some there were some thoughts contributed to the discussion about whether there is a problem, and if so, to what degree should ACIR get weighed into that, because there are some other state policies that may be coming into play. So the resolution of the meeting, paraphrasing a little bit of what Jim just said, was that we would dedicate our next subcommittee meeting to hearing from Deputy Commissioner Bergeron to get her perspective on it. And then at that point, we can decide whether we want to make a recommendation to the full ACIR to take this on as a matter for the full body to consider. So I think so. We're going to be doing that on March 22nd, as Jim indicated. And I think we'll come back after that at our April meeting to discuss whether that's something we want to take up.
Yeah, and I would like to just add, Brendan, that this really can't be. We can't approach this as an adversarial project. We pretty much can't approach it as a problem. What we need to do is approach it as how to best improve the relationship between state agencies and municipalities. How can we contribute to creating a more perfect union, so to speak, as it relates to the communication process that comes from the executive branch, from the agencies, down to the municipalities and the reverse flow. So I think we should not try to identify it as a problem, really. It should be that we are really focused on how to enhance the communication process.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, thanks, Jim. John?
Just quickly, I just want to emphasize what Jim just kind of said. I think when you survey towns, I think we feel very comfortable right now with the amount of communications we have from the emergency services side of DEMIS. They have excelled in COVID communications. So just want to make sure that as a town, a representative, people know that we get a lot of email, a lot of back and forth. And if we need something, our area coordinators are very productive. That being said, our areas do not line up with COG areas, just for the record.
Right. Right. Which is another topic of discussion.
Right. And that might be something that feeds into this conversation. There are other aspects of the conversation. When you're looking to create this government of the future, you probably want to be looking at all of the various components that will make a better functioning government.
So, yes, right. That certainly came up in our conversation last week, because this leads very well into what John just said, which is the lack of overlay of the various districts that we've established in Connecticut about this, and maybe that launches that conversation for ACIR to consider. John Filcher.
Thank you. I just want to agree with John's comments about the borders, and there's certainly issues to talk about, but, and I'm glad that we're going to talk with the deputy commissioner. But I think we also have to keep in mind that the pandemic is not done, and our recovery and our response from recovery is still ongoing. So I think we need to be very careful. We can look at these issues, but this is not something in the rearview mirror yet. There's still stuff ahead. And, you know, I have a meeting for Region 4 DEMIS this Wednesday, I believe, where we're going to get briefed again as we do on an ongoing basis. So this is still an active process, and it's good to get the update. And there are some issues, and I think that boundary thing is a big one. But when we dive in, I'm uncertain as to when that will be. Just as I'm not uncertain, but I think the state has done a very good job in terms of communication to locally. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Great. So we'll report back next month on that. Okay. Thanks, Jim, for that. Also out of that meeting, there was a conversation that was raised by John Filczek and Francis about some other, unrelated to the emergency management discussion, but about other things that the LGF subcommittee might want to consider. I don't know if John or Francis, you want to take that to explain, or unfortunately, the three of us were supposed to get together sometime over the course of this week, and it was just given, all the stuff going on in the legislature and other things going on, it was very difficult to schedule. So we haven't done that yet, but maybe John or Francis, you might want to offer the group a little bit of perspective on what you were thinking about with that. John, you're muted if you're jumping in.
I was going to defer to Francis.
Thanks,
there
John.
There you go, Francis. Go ahead.
There you go.
Yes. Well, yeah, we discussed a couple items, and I might be forgetting one or two, so I was going to hope you were going to lead, John, but I know I definitely brought up the issue of municipal finances and what it means over the long term. But there was another issue that we discussed. It's skipping my mind right now.
Well, the tax incidence report, I know, is one of them.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, the second tax incident report in the state's history just came out this week, pretty much affirmed the disparities that we saw coming out of the 2014 report. And I think that's something we need to take a deeper dive into with revenue services. And perhaps it might be good to invite Commissioner Boughton to a future ACIR meeting on that topic, because apparently they're going to develop a research division within DRS so that their obligation by statute to do these tax incident studies every 2 years, which would be great. And that's something only the state of Minnesota has been doing it since the 90s that way. And it's really provided them with tremendous metrics and insight into what the impact of their tax system has. So I think it'd be interesting to talk with the commissioner as to how they envision that group to be structured and how that might relate to our work.
Right. Yeah, as we discussed that a little bit earlier, that I know Commissioner Boughton has expressed a lot of interest in doing that with us and to be discussed. And so maybe that's a subcommittee topic that we can then have at that level and then bring in for the full committee, the full commission to review. But Francis, also, you had another topic that you've raised previously about the idea that perhaps we also should be considering the idea of municipal finance in the sense that, should we be whether our system of municipal support actually enables poor fiscal management for towns. And I think your thought was maybe we should be looking at municipal fiscal soundness as a criterion. Mm-hmm. I'm phrasing this for you.
Well, you know, I don't know if I want to say it enables poor fiscal management. It also enables good fiscal management, right? Right. It doesn't really give any guidelines besides do a CAFR and whatnot for municipalities. And as a consequence, even municipalities that are socioeconomically very similar in terms of their residents and businesses can have vastly different fiscal trajectories, which ends up down the road having impacts on them and ends up with some of the findings we see in the tax incidence report. So, I think the things we're going to look at, one of them was looking at, are there ways we can help municipalities to chart a more sustainable course, not just looking only at whether our tax system is structured optimally for our residents, businesses, economic growth, but also our spending and fiscal management policies optimal. And then, of course, getting back to taxes, as I've mentioned before, and as has Lyle, do we structure our taxes in such a way to make us more competitive federally and to help us maximize federal deductions and bringing more federal money? So there's a nexus of various related things on this, on the taxation side and on the spending slash fiscal management side.
Right, right. So I think that we concluded at the ACIR subcommittee meeting last week that we would also raise that issue ourselves. And I know John and Francis and I were going to talk about that and figure out how to form that into a concise thought to bring back to the group. But also maybe we can dedicate some time at our next subcommittee meeting, perhaps to have Commissioner Boughton there, or unless we want to take a little bit more time among ourselves to discuss it and then bring him in.
You know, I think it might be good for us, at least the smaller LGF subcommittee or subcommittee to meet first. I'm available whenever, just sitting in my house freezing with no heat right now. So,
oh no.
Yes. So, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jim.
I just wanted to mention just a reminder that I think part of what the discussion was about had to do with the potential revenue from the federal government that is left on the table due to a number of factors, but that we aren't getting our fair share, you might say, of the federal revenue because of our own clumsiness.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you for reminding me of that, because that's actually the context in which we started talking about regional boundaries. And the fact that we don't fit into county governments, you know, this gets into the county equivalency issue. But if COGS are the county equivalent, then, you know, shouldn't we be having some of our other catchment areas coincide with our COG boundaries for the purpose of maximizing federal funds that are otherwise left on the table? Right. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for bringing that in. And That's a big topic, and I think it's one that's uniquely suited for what we're supposed to be doing. So more to come on that, I guess, right? I don't know if John or Francis, you want to add anything more.
No, I think Jim's point is excellent. I think it's bigger than how we structure our state taxes to maximize federal deductions and credits. It's also do our boundaries align so we actually have economies of scale to go to the federal government? Do we actually have grant writing resources to put in for discretionary funds? Essentially, what is our game plan on maximizing our federal take? And the state doesn't have one right now, as far as I can tell.
Right. And in fact, I recounted my history in the legislature of fighting with previous administrations over allowing locals in different context. I'm thinking in particular with regard to economic development districts, where we were leaving on the table money, federal money for economic development purposes, because the state actually wanted to control all of it itself and be its own single catchment area and then dish it out individually as they saw fit and not allow the regions to, to come together, form EDDs, and then apply as a region. We corrected that legislatively in the past, but that's my own personal history with that. So, John, I don't know if you had anything else to add on that.
I just want to say, we have some resources. I think this is a wide open topic, but, and we have right on our group here, we have John L. Susser, who was a member of the state tax panel, and that report, which I think has still got an awful lot of validity and should probably be circulated and dust off. And we have folks that Lyle and I work with a lot, like Bill Sebus. There, he's got it right there. I think he's got a pocket edition now there. And so there's some folks I think that could really provide us some insights and context to it historically and currently, because it's a topic that needs to be discussed, but it can be overwhelming.
Agreed.
Just a quick point, I guess, where I lived in the Midwest, the state religion was maximizing federal financial participation. So everything went through that prism. So when we deinstitutionalized people with disabilities, we put most of it on the federal tab. And it was designed very, very carefully to do that. So I think there may be some research there in terms of what other states have done to maximize federal financial participation. One of them is looking at your federal programs and making sure you get an appropriate amount. The other one, though, is being competitive with grant programs. And since we have many, many small towns, they don't have the horsepower to have a three-person grant writing team. So I think that's an example of what I'm talking about in terms of a research project, sort of best practices in maximizing federal financial participation. And I think Francis's idea was a very interesting candidate there.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you. Yeah, Senator, welcome.
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
We can. Do
they steal all your memorabilia, Senator?
I'm not there. I'm missing all my posters. I'm running back and forth between meetings today, but I'm wondering in this discussion here, we have this situation for a long time now of counties getting money and us not. Maybe for one of our meetings, if we could get both or one of our U.S. senators, it can't be difficult to amend the bill to include COGS if, in fact, there's a lack of counties, I guess is the best way to describe it. We should be able to get the same kind of funding that counties get. If we don't have counties, we have alternatives. That's not in legislation. That can make a difference of millions of dollars. And I think it's a discussion we ought to have with our two senators. See, it could cover the whole state. It could cover all the COGS. It might be interesting that, I know what it's like to stick an amendment in and get something done. And the long-term benefit from that may help all of us. So just an idea to pursue. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Senator. And I know Sam has led the effort for county equivalency, which ACIR has also endorsed. But yes, what you're suggesting goes beyond that. So I think that's really well taken and should be part of whatever it is that we come up with.
We can't unless the feds allow it. So
yes, exactly right. So bringing in our federal delegation also makes sense. Right. Right. Steve and then John Filchek.
Yeah, I was just going to point out that in the county, and Francis can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe John or Lyle for that matter from the COGS, the COGS are recognized, if I'm not mistaken, in the county equivalency actions that are being taken by the census right now. I will stand corrected if I'm wrong on that. But I think
no, you're correct, Steve. We are just waiting on a notice in the Federal Register for county equivalency. But, that's only one piece of the puzzle. The average county population in the country, so our median county population is 50,000. There are a lot of very small, weak counties that don't apply to grants. And so even though they have county status, it may not actually get them much. There's a lot more than just than being on the guest list to get into the party. You actually have to dress for the party too. So I think that's what we're talking about here is that's one of many elements we have to discuss.
Right. That and the fact that catchment areas for different services don't align easily, and that also complicates things. Is that a fair?
That's absolutely correct, Brendan. But it's also even getting into, is our state tax code structured in a way that does this, right? There's so many different aspects. You know, how can we minimize how much money we send to Washington? How can we maximize how much we get back? So there's kind of a supply and demand side, and then there's a lot more to it. So I think we could actually, in the LGF subcommittee, come up with the framework of the aspects we want to look at in this.
Right. Thank you. Okay.
If I could just to reinforce John, what Steve was saying, you know, the federal infrastructure bill came out, and I've been through, I don't know, half a dozen briefings, and they go through who's eligible, and they'll talk about counties, MPOs, and local governments. COGS are not part of that. So I ask the same question each time. What about a non-MPO, like my COG or the Northwest Hills? And I finally sat down with the federal highway folks, and they said, you know, when the Congress put it together, they figured you're either going to be in a county or an MPO. And they didn't figure there'd be a COG, you know, a non-MPO, non-county situation like we have here in Connecticut. So there's a little bit of a workaround, but it is a hole in that federal legislation that, you know, we're having to work, you know, right, work with and work around. But it does show, it's an example of, you know, we're unique here in Connecticut, Massachusetts. And, you know, I don't know if they've got the same situation with their rurals in Mass, but at least two of us have it here in Connecticut.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, we'll keep up this conversation through the subcommittee at our next meeting, following Deputy Commissioner Bergeron's discussion as well. So, those who are interested, please feel free to join us for that discussion. And then let's see. I don't know if there's anything else, Bruce, in that agenda item that we wanted to bring up. I'm seeing legislative assignments, but I'm not sure what reference is.
I think the legislative assignments thing was actually spoken of earlier, that just to mention that something could be included in a bill that would affect the ACIR. Oh, right. To date, I don't believe there is anything.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that.
Welcome.
Okay. So I would be a little anxious to get on to item six and other old business, because the first item there is a voting matter, and I just want to make sure that we take care of that before we potentially lose a quorum. So item A on that is an endorsement of the updated CAPS blueprint. If you remember, we heard last month from Fran Rabinowitz, who presented to us the CAPS blueprint for this year, which is an abbreviated version of what we also endorsed last year. That was sent out to folks. I think there was general consensus in the group that we would take a look at it and come back this month to vote to support that. So let me do this. If I could take a motion first to endorse and then and get that on the table, and then we can have a discussion about it. So could I?
So moved, Mr. Chair. Lyle, right?
Lyle, okay. For a motion, seconded okay. By John Filczyk. So it's on the floor. Let's have a conversation about that. Is there anyone who'd like to weigh in or have any other thoughts about it? I know Fran is actually conducting her monthly CAPS meeting as we speak, so she wasn't able to join us, but Maureen is here on her behalf. Maureen?
I don't mind jumping in. Thank you so much, Brendan. You know, we'll be testifying about the CAPS blueprint as appropriate during the upcoming session, but what it really does is try to equalize the playing field and not have winners and losers. So the ECS component of it is fair to all school districts. The excess cost formula that's in there is very equitable to all school districts. Some of the other formulas that are out there now have winners and losers. So as this body considers endorsing it, it is developed with the lens of helping all districts advance and not to have a winner or a loser, because that is often how some of these funding formulas right now are kind of playing out. But I appreciate the opportunity and I'm happy to answer any questions. I know Fran went into quite a bit more detail a few weeks ago.
Yeah, thanks, Maureen. Other thoughts on that or comments? I think we generally have been supportive of this, both in the larger form and the more abbreviated form for this year. So if that's the case and there aren't any other comments, let's call for, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed and those abstaining.
I will abstain.
Yeah, Francis to abstain, Martin to abstain.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Dane as well, Kyle Abercrombie.
Okay, thanks, Kyle. Yes. Okay. With that, so with those abstentions, the item passes. So we'll be happy. I think the appropriate thing, Maureen, if you can help us out with this, when this item is coming up in the Education Committee, I'm assuming, right, or the appropriate subcommittee.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes, meaning both.
Yes, and we're actually testifying both pro and con to some of the things that are coming up in those committees because they either align or don't align with the blueprint.
I see. Okay. Well, I think it's appropriate for the ACIR to at least submit written testimony in support, not necessarily to personally testify, but if you could give us a heads up as to the bill and the hearing that may be coming up where this is happening, we can put something together and make sure that it's filed.
Absolutely. I can send you some of the things that we've already prepared and that might guide you in submitting your version of testimony.
Great. Thank you.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Hey, Maureen, one other thing, just as on a personal note, on the topic that I was addressing with CAPS this morning, I sent Dawn an update that I literally just popped as I was speaking, which was some legislative language that actually is going to do exactly what that I hadn't seen before, but it was waiting for. And I sent it off to Dawn, and it might be something that Dawn and Fran might be interested in looking at in the context of that conversation.
Yes, they actually sent it out immediately after you sent it. So we all got it.
Okay, good. So we
got it.
Testimony on that too. Great, thank you. Okay, so the next item under old business is our UGA study, UConn UGA studies, and the Institute. So Lyle, that's usually your bailiwick.
Yep, Mr. Chair, I spoke with the writer of our shared services report, and Professor LaCadre, and she would like to do the shared services webinar sometime after May 1st to accommodate her schedule. And I talked briefly to Rick Porth. I think he's on the call. So CCM is on board with doing a webinar on shared services. We have a report, as you recall, done by Kylie Booley from UConn, and we have a CROG PowerPoint on shared services. And the plan would be to do that after May 1.
Excellent.
So that's sort of the next step, and we're waiting, for that date to come up.
Great. Okay. And then the other topic, which is the recommendations that we made to the governor's office regarding ARPA funding, as well as I'll add to that item the potential for additional staffing at OPM. I don't know that Martin can comment on either of those things, but if anyone else has any updates on that, this would be the time.
So, sure, Mr. Chair, happy on the ARPA funding. A request did go into Secretary McCaw, as everyone's aware of the changes in OPM in that seat. I will be reviewing that and bringing that forward to Acting Secretary Beckham. I know at this time nothing was approved, within midterm budget proposals that the governor did put out at the beginning of the month. So at this point, nothing is included right now regarding the position of ACR looking at three other positions to help assist OPM. And then the ARPA funds is a separate piece, but nothing's been proposed yet with that, with the legislature. And I will be, you know, reviewing that with the acting secretary next week again, just to bring him up to speed on those requests that have come in.
Great. Okay.
If Mr. Chair, can I ask Martin a question? Who is the acting secretary?
Jeff Beckham.
Okay, right. I think I might have heard that. Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry, I forgot.
Right. Okay. Well, and Martin, you know, if you can, I realize, you know, that you as a need to be a neutral party on this, but if you could at least perhaps give us a heads up on at the appropriate time when if we need to kind of, you know, express or be available for comment, if you could let us know.
Definitely we'll do that. I'll keep you in the loop.
Terrific. Terrific. That's the best. That's the way to phrase it. If you can keep us in the loop, that's really appreciate that. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Morton. So that is, that actually we kind of sprightly got through our agenda today. Is there any new business, that anyone would like to raise? Yeah, Lon.
I got a quick one. This one might be of interest to people. There's a bill before the Energy Committee called 278, and it involves local cable access television stations. I'm sure many of you have them in your regions, and these are basically overlaid on the old cable franchise areas that have mostly been disbanded because of competition coming into those regions. But the cable channels remain, and they're often nonprofits. And what's happened is that over time, as people are cutting the cord, the cable companies have been paying less into these stations because they have less television subscribers. And so there's an effort afoot, because a lot of these stations are kind of on shaky ground financially now because of this. The cable companies are losing, you know, nationwide, a million customers sometimes a month on their TV side of their business. So the bill is trying to clarify things, and actually, in looking at the existing statute, there's some grounds here that perhaps some of these internet streaming services should have been paying into this fund to begin with. So it's going to be, a pretty big discussion in this area, because it looks as though, if you look at the definitions, that there's many more entities responsible for helping fund these local access stations that are not. So this bill, again, 278, is going to have a public hearing on Tuesday. And, you know, a lot of these cable access channels are really in trouble right now. So this might be a big effort that needs to be done for our local municipalities.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. I do have a question, Lon. You know, I understand the historic value of those channels, but we live in an age where information is readily accessible on the internet, and anybody can create a YouTube program. So I wonder if, you know, the model of these stations could use some revisiting for the 21st century.
I don't disagree. I think actually what their value has shifted really from the broadcasting component to the production component, because they have facilities that are very useful for internet broadcast. And a lot of them, because people have cut the cord, a lot of people are consuming content on these stations locally through the internet, through YouTube and other platforms. But I do think the studios themselves and perhaps the content produced in those studios is the value proposition now. And I think many municipalities have made use of that.
Yeah, we've seen some libraries diversify into providing production facilities. And I wonder, you know, that's a benefit for local residents and small businesses. I wonder if there's an opportunity for some of these cable stations to look at partnering more with community members beyond their conventional programming and airing, you know, town hall meetings to help people provide, you know, create their own online content.
And some of them do. Some have in their bylaws restrictions against commercial activity, and I think they definitely need to look at that for sure. And you know, the underlying purpose of providing local public components is often not very commercially viable, especially given how the internet advertising model has really made it difficult. I once tried to start a business in this area, and I can tell you how difficult it is. Because of the costs involved, it's very difficult to have a competitive advertising platform. But there's definitely some things that they should be looking at. Absolutely. And I think there's also some benefit to making sure that, you know, we've put this fee in place in exchange for granting a very exclusive access to, in this case, pole attachments for the cable companies. But if you look at some of the other internet providers that are coming over the air, they're being granted exclusive access to another valuable public asset, which are radio frequencies. So I think there's some, you know, some balance here that needs to be struck insofar as why these stations existed, and certainly the distribution model is going to change. But I agree that they should also be diversifying.
Yeah, thank you. I think Martin was first, and then John Alcesi.
Thanks, Brandon. I just wanted to bring up, in case people are not aware of, two bills that have come out that have relation to some of the conversations we've had here at ACIR. One is Senate Bill 324, is a working group to study the Title VII general statutes. That bill actually asks OPM to do a working group. And then the other one is 5359, an act for study of feasibility of permitting online advertisement of legal notices by municipalities. Both things that have come up multiple times. Both of those are asking for studies to be conducted by OPM. One of the things we may look at doing, it hasn't been discussed yet, but looking at tying ACIR into both of those. So I just wanted to give you a heads up so that we may be, you know, as these are obviously areas of interest and things that we have worked on as ACIR, is that we do some, you know, there may be language saying in cooperation with, or something that may be proposed. Nothing's definite yet, but wanted to just give a heads up on those.
Well, you know, Martin, as chair, I'll take the prerogative to say, happy to do it so long as the governor agrees and the legislature agrees to add more staff to facilitate our ability to help you. Help us help you, right?
Correct.
That should be the plan. Okay. No, thanks for the heads up on that and keeping
You're
us
welcome.
In the loop. If there's something, again, we can be doing as it's being considered, let us know. Thanks. John.
Quickly, in terms of community access, when those things are looked at, we need to also review the PEGPESHIA grant process, which is funded by some of those fees, and make sure that the grant guidelines are broad enough to look at a new model that may be focused on streaming, editing and streaming.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Okay, great. Any other thoughts or comments on items that we should be aware of, at least, or discussing? John Filczek?
Since we're mentioning legislation, I'll just mention quickly Bill 5256, which is another study. This one deals with consolidating transit districts I guess the presumption that if you consolidate them, you'll create efficiencies and save money. I'm going to be testifying on that on Monday, suggesting to them that rather than a consolidation approach, they take a regional approach and apply regionalism onto that, which I've tried to explain in my testimony and I won't try to go into today, but, and also to work with the COGS and their respective expertise on transportation, which is not present in the bill, and to also look at nonprofit provision of transportation and all. And it's a very narrow look, trying to with a lot of assumptions. So hopefully they can broaden out their study scope. So just mention that.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I saw that on the agenda for Monday for the Transportation Committee, and was thinking the same thing. But I'm glad you're going to be participating in that. Francis?
Yes, thank you, Brendan. I just a couple of responses to Martin and to John. I think, again, this is where it could be really helpful to have ACIR involved in some of these studies, because if the study is very, very narrowly construed just to look at legal notices, you miss out on what a lot of the benefit of putting things online can be, getting things onto larger procurement platforms where it can be sent out very quickly to a lot of potential bidders. If you're just copying and pasting a snippet of text and putting it onto a website, you don't really get the large audience unless somebody stumbles across it by Googling it. So I think there's a lot more we could look at in terms of procurement if we start changing how we think about legal notices. Second, I appreciate John raising that bill here. It's interesting. Section 13B-4 of the Connecticut General Statutes requires the DOT commissioner to prepare a plan setting forth a recommendation for a restructured system of regional transit districts within the state. Of course, that plan has to be presented on before February 1st, 1978. And so what I find very interesting is that many of these things we're discussing have been brought up in the past. They are lingering issues, and they have been addressed in the statutes. And if we're looking at addressing Title VII, because that's old and crufty, there's so much more in the statutes. You know, we have language that considers 1959 the future still in our statutes. And it would be good at some point to have a discussion about a statutory review process just to start eliminating all outdated language. I just found a reference to the Tri-State Planning Commission, which was dissolved in 1981, and CONDOT is still required to coordinate with it. So there's a lot in there that is dead wood and needs to go.
Okay, so as I was saying to Martin, I think this is these are areas that are really ripe for what ACIR has been meant to do, but maybe we haven't had been asked to do it or have been engaged on this. So I think these are all really interesting topics that we can and should be weighing in on, and hence. And I'm only half kidding when I say that, you know, that is made more possible if we can actually have a little bit more staff support to enable that. So that's my shameless plug once again on that topic. Yep. Yeah, John.
One suggestion, perhaps not to add to Bruce's workload, but sorry, Bruce. But for, you know, a lot of us are going to be presenting testimony and we're flagging bills. Clearly CCM does a whole ton of those. And on the education side, if we had some kind of a document depository, you know, on these, so that for the ACIR members, just to see what each of the members are commenting on. And I think that may be a helpful piece to inform each of us.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Is that possible, Bruce? Do you think we can have a kind of a little bit of a Dropbox for testimony?
It would be very possible. And, you know, if you notice in the minutes, when someone mentions submitting testimony or mentions a bill of interest, I then take the time to try to hunt it down. And so if everybody who mentions testimony or mentions a bill were to just email it to me, email me a link, that would make, I would spend a lot less time and could use that time to create a central repository available on your website that would be, I could title it, you know, not testimony submitted by ACIR, but by members of the ACIR or their organizations. I would save time doing that, and it would be a more valuable product in the end.
I think that would be great, you know, for, because we're all watching different things for our own, you know, I've got another one on Monday where they're going to transfer dog licenses to the state from town clerks. And I won't go into details, but it creates a lot of problems for my regional program that we've got set up. And there's a bit of a multiple unfunded mandates. I'll just throw that out to Ron. But within that as well, to towns and cities in the state. So there's a lot, you know, it'd be great to have that central depository.
Yeah. If I hear Bruce correctly, though, too, what may be helpful is rather than just, obviously if we send like a PDF copy of testimony, that may be sufficient. But I think what he's also, I think what Bruce, correct me, but what I think you're also asking is if you could forward him a link to where it is. That'll just make his job a lot easier in terms of accumulating. Is that a fair?
That would be better still. But honestly, if I were to know that your testimony went to the Transportation Committee for their March 5th hearing, then I can easily find it. I sometimes don't know which committee it's necessarily going to be in or under whose name. Right. You don't need to wait until the General Assembly manages to get it up online. If you can just tell me who you submitted it to and say regarding which bill, under whose name did it go as, you know, CCM, or did it go as Ron Thomas, that kind of thing. Just a few clues. That'll help me a lot.
Sure, sure. I mean, I think it also could be very difficult to keep track if we're also adding everything that CCM submits to, and that CAP submits to, and CABE, and the cost, and, you know, not every single bill that you provide testimony. Ron, I don't know how many bills you testify on.
Of course, yeah, there are quite a few there. Yeah, I was thinking along the lines of maybe ACIR priorities, or you know, CCM top priority, something like that. Otherwise, you'd be inundated. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So use some discretion, I guess, for right. members. But I think John's thought is a great one. It would be very helpful to me to know kind of where you all are coming from on particular topics that may not rise to the level of full discussion within ACIR. So, and I see Margaret putting her thumb up. So. Good. Okay. Well, we'll work on that over the course of the next month or so. Any other items for consideration by the group? Margaret, do you have something to add real quick, or are you? If you're speaking, you're muted. So don't know if you have any, if you wanted to speak to us.
If Margaret's not speaking to us, motion to adjourn.
Well, there is a public comment section if there's
any. All right, there we go. Sorry.
Fell into that category too. Margaret, are you good? Okay. I think Margaret's good. So if there is no further business, talked a lot about our next subcommittee meeting, the LGF subcommittee. So that is on Tuesday, March 22nd at 10:30. So you may want to just keep an eye out for that or mark that on your calendars now. And our next meeting, believe it or not, is on April Fool's Day for the full, not that that implies or means anything, but you can also mark your calendars for that. So with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I move. Lyle Ray.
Lyle and Maureen for a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. All right. We're good. Thank you all. And, you know, keep your head down as you try to get through this next few weeks of the session.
Thank you.
All right.